Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 209. I'm Rob Wright, Security News Director at TechTarget, and I am here with Senior Security News Writer Alex Kalafi. Alex, welcome.
Thanks, Rob.
How are you doing on this fine Monday?
I'm doing okay. No complaints. Has been quiet in security world, but given what we're going to talk about today and given what we might be talking about on future episodes, I think the dead period of security news is well over.
Yeah. The post RSA reprieve doesn't seem like it's going to be very long. Yes, we are here today to discuss big news and a topic that we've covered pretty extensively here, not just on the pod, but with a number of articles across several years now. The Joe Sullivan case. Joe Sullivan, former Uber chief security officer, he was sentenced last Thursday on May 4th. And Alex, you wrote the story. Give us a rundown of what happened.
Yes. So Joe Sullivan, former Uber chief security officer, has basically been in trouble for years over his supposed, I guess no longer supposed, activities involving a data breach in 2016. So he came in 2015 following an AWS S3 Uber-owned breach that leaked some customer and driver details in like 2014. He came in the aftermath of that in 2015, was dealing with the FTC over that 2014 breach, and then in late 2016 there was a second AWS S3 breach that also involved personal customer information. But the reports are that the threat actors involved in that second, more recent breach reached out to him and said, "Hey, we breached you guys." And then he, in an apparent collaboration with former Uber CEO Travis
Kalanick.
They sent the threat actors a $100,000 payment through its HackerOne bug bounty platform, which is highly unethical, according to that version of the story. And it didn't become knowledge to the FTC, despite them wrapping up their investigation of the 2014 breach and doing a fine already. The new breach that was very similar was not disclosed until the new CEO, after Travis Kalanick was out, was briefed on the situation, fired Joe Sullivan, and then publicly disclosed and told the FTC. Very confusing. But
yeah, big Bloomberg story.
But the long and the short of it is the idea that Joe Sullivan was chiefly responsible for covering up this data breach. That is the thing that is responsible for all of this. That 2016. He was charged formally in 2020. And then he was found guilty last October. I believe it was October.
Yes.
And then in April, the prosecution recommended that he get 15 months in prison for his crimes. And then as part of that, I think Joe Sullivan sort of pleaded for himself not to get jail time, and I think he sent something like 100 letters from friends and coworkers and stuff.
I don't know how many letters it was, but I think it was like 180 different people contributed to various letters to the court, to the judge, basically vouching for his character and saying, you know, he's a good guy and so on and so forth.
And the judge, Judge William Orrick, ultimately sentenced Sullivan not to jail time, but to 3 years of probation and 200 hours of community service. And the tone was, if I remember right, was less that you're not guilty and more
Well,
there are a few angles in this that I'll let you get into, but that's the long and the short of what today's story was about. The prosecution asked for jail time, and instead of jail time, he got 3 years probation and 200 hours community service for having this role in covering up this data breach that occurred in 2016. That's the story.
Yes. And to your point, your last point there, Judge Ork's comments were not that this was a bad case by the DOJ, this was overzealous prosecution, this was, you know, he never should have been charged, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which I, and we'll discuss later, a number of InfoSec folks have claimed. A number of people, a number of CISOs have basically said this happens all the time. He shouldn't have been charged with this. This is wrong. The judge basically said, you did this. You were wrong. You were convicted. However, you know, I'm going to be, you know, merciful. I'm paraphrasing here, but basically said to the larger public, don't take this as a sign that what happened here was no big deal. It was a big deal. And the next time this happens, the next CISO or whoever who does something like this is going to end up in jail, mm-hmm. which I thought was interesting. So I have my own thoughts about this verdict, but you wrote the story. You've been, you know, we've been discussing this and covering this for some time. Like, you've been here since 2019, right?
I even talked to Joe Sullivan once.
Oh, that's right, you did. So yeah, when he was at Cloudflare, that's correct. He was hired early 2018, mid 2018. I should call up the timeline that we did on the, yes, mid 2018. So he's fired from Uber in late 2017. Hired as Cloudflare's first ever CISO in 2018, May.
And then left, I think, around when
the time.
I forget it.
I think it was the time that he was convicted. So I don't know. What I have a lot of thoughts. What were you surprised by the sentence?
Well, there's a bunch of ways to, I guess, define surprise. Like, as a white collar criminal, I guess there's that part of you that's like, of course he didn't go to jail, right? Then you look at the prosecution's argument for giving him 15 months, and it felt a little thin, I'm not going to lie, from their document.
Yeah.
The crux of their argument was basically, he's a white-collar criminal, and they shouldn't get away with crimes. And a lot of Uber customers were affected by this, which is fair, but was like not... I really don't think their argument really brought the case home in its own right from what I read. And, you know, there's a lot of situations when business and law come against each other where you're like, the judge doesn't know what they're talking about. But I actually agree with the judge, I think, based on what we know at this moment. Mm. And the reason I say that is, one, it's not a very, if all this is correct, Sullivan did wrong stuff and deserved to sort of get his name dragged through the mud a little bit. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we should know what the charges were.
One count of misprision of justice, I believe. Of a felony, and one of obstruction of the proceedings of Federal Trade Commission, which is lying to them.
Yes.
But the other aspect of it, the aspect I agree with the judge, is that it wasn't necessarily the cleanest. He absolutely did everything wrong, and he deserves to bear the brunt of it. Because according to reports, according to the text messages we do have, according to all the information we do have, Travis Kalanick has basically been unfairly absent from everything that's happened here.
Yeah.
Despite being the CEO at the time, being probably someone who had a hand in hiring Sullivan and being in the loop when all of this occurred based on what we know, which makes you almost say, shouldn't he be where Sullivan is right now and Sullivan be where Travis is right now to some little extent? And I'm not saying that is the case. Maybe I'm wrong, but either way, the CEO who seemed to be in the loop being missing is a big unfair stench hanging over all of this.
Yeah, and so we were not in the courtroom when this was handed down last Thursday. There were some reporters, local reporters, who were there, and there's a really good write-up about the hearing from law.com. One of their reporters, Maria Denzio, was in the courtroom and wrote about this, and was just, you know, one of the comments here was, I thought this was just fascinating that the judge was very direct about noticing that there were no charges against Kalanick, that he never appeared in court. He was never called. He submitted a letter, I guess, like vouching for Sullivan, but like Oreck said, he was quote unquote just as culpable as Sullivan for the data breach cover up. I mean,
which I get.
Yeah. Like that's pretty significant.
Mm-hmm.
And
I guess the last thing I'll say is all that combined with how messy of a situation this is, and the various ways you can interpret everyone's actions during that time, where it's like, you know, everyone did wrong things, but you don't know the context and scale of the wrongness necessarily all of the time. And all of that put together, having him be convicted guilty, having him do the 200 hours community service, which I don't know what that would even mean, and 3 years of probation. It's like, yes, you could say white collar criminal gets away with it again, and you might even be right if that's your argument. But when all of it's put together, I'm like, nah, this seems to me like a fairly sound result to all of what we've seen so far. That's my take. Sorry. Mm.
So I have a slightly different take. I think I may be more along the line of white collar guy gets off again.
Okay.
And here's why. So we talked about this a lot on the previous pod about how when he was convicted of both charges, I said I wasn't really surprised, even though part of me was like, man, a CISO, a well-known CISO is going down, is going to be, I mean, a convicted felon over something like this. I wasn't really surprised because when federal prosecutors bring charges, they almost always win. And you can look at all the stats and all the data about this. But when the DOJ, when the feds bring charges, they get convictions. 90-something percent of the time. 97, whatever, 90, 95. It's very, very high. So when they brought charges against him and they took this to trial and there was no plea, I thought to myself, this guy's cooked. He's going to get convicted. When they recommended 15 months, I thought that was high. What I in my head, and I should have made a prediction about this when we talked about it last, in my head, and maybe I did make a prediction about it, I guess I'd have to go back and listen to the pod. I don't think we discussed sentencing, but I thought for sure he was going to get at least like 90 days, you know, maybe 3 months. That the judge wasn't going to give them the full, and people covering the trial, you know, there was a lot of the sort of, a lot of questions about why Sullivan was the only guy on trial for this when it looked like there were other parties. So the judge, you know, in his comments, following through on a lot of thoughts and stuff that had been said during during the case, during the actual, the trial itself. So it wasn't, his comments weren't very surprising. But I thought there'd be at least some jail time. So I was definitely surprised that the judge saw fit to give him just probation and some community service and basically fire a shot across the bow of CISOs in America and basically say, and I'll call up his comment from the law.com story here. He was very direct. He said, I hope everyone in the CISO community takes this as a lesson and not leniency.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're going to get into whether we think that's going to be taken that way later in this discussion, but I was shocked. I thought he really would have gotten at least a little bit of jail time. Now, I don't know if that's necessarily right. The judge also said that a lot of people did not have a clear understanding of what went on in this case, just like Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco talked about in her RSA keynote. People think that this was just like a gray area. And he said in his comments, this is not a gray area. This is like when you are under order, from the FTC to divulge all information and you sort of do a runaround like this, that's not right. That's illegal. So I get that a lot of people vouched for him. I get that a lot of people in the InfoSec community have said, look, this guy, this is a gray area and a lot of people do this and the law isn't clear. And I think that argument, I've said this before and I'll say it again. I think that argument could be made for a lot of folks that are maybe new to information security. They're maybe new to the CISO position. Sullivan is not that. Sullivan was a long time InfoSec guy. He was a former federal prosecutor himself. There is not a credible argument in my mind for mm-hmm. him to make that he didn't understand what was going on. And in fact, I mean, maybe we should turn to his comments, the comments that he made in court. It seems like he definitely was reticent. He acknowledged that he effed up. I guess apologetic might be a way to frame it, but he said, what I did was wrong and I should have pushed for transparency and I had the power to do that and I didn't do it. Do I think that he's a little bit of a fall guy here? Sure. Mm-hmm. Do I have questions about why Kalanick didn't get anything? Wasn't charged. Wasn't whatever. I don't know. It's a little strange, but yeah. I think given Sullivan's history, his experience, the fact that he was a former DOJ guy himself, that he knows the law, that he knows what the FTC does, that he knows that he knew what the FTC was doing at that time. And it would have been the easiest thing in the world. It's not that breach wasn't even your fault. That 2014, you had nothing to do with it. Nothing. It would have been the easiest thing in the world to just say, hey, Travis, we had another breach. This just happened. I've barely been on the job. Not really my fault. We got to divulge it. And instead they do this. And it's clear he knew it was wrong. And so for all the people out there that are saying, well, this happens all the time and it's not clear. And I think they made a good faith. I don't buy it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't buy it. I never bought it. I don't buy it now. I certainly don't buy it now after reading the guy's comments here in court. And no one involved in this case believes that, not the judge, not the prosecutors, and the defense attorneys barely even made that argument. So I don't know. I was a little surprised. And I think that as apologetic as Sullivan is about what happened, I don't know. Do you think this is, I guess we should turn to the next question. Do you think this is going to have the kind of impact that maybe Judge Orrick thinks it's going to have? Do you think that CISOs are going to be scared straight? Do you think that they're going to start being transparent and say, you know what, I don't think we should just pay off this ransomware gang and sweep this under the rug and pretend like this didn't happen. I think we should probably be on the up and up and level with people.
I guess the question to respond to your question would be, when was the last time something like this happened that wasn't this, right? Not like the specific case of an ongoing FTC investigation about a similar breach that you didn't disclose the second breach while this one was wrapping up, and you paid threat actors through a HackerOne bug bounty platform. Like, it's a yeah. very spicy case, which is the reason we're talking about it all these years later. But to your point of this being white collar guy gets off easy, maybe that could be true, and the judge's words could be empty under the argument that what happened was so highly specific that, yeah, something like this may happen again, but like, there's not really an epidemic of this happening. This is the only time I know of this happening. So it's like, well, it's kind of like, well, thanks, Judge, but I don't know the next time your words will even be relevant. It's kind of the other thing.
To your point, I do think that this is a unique case because it wasn't just a matter of like, oh, there was a data breach and let's pay off the hacker and cover it up. Because that does, I mean, again, how many times have we said this? How many times have we discussed this? I know I brought this up in the previous Joe Sullivan pod when he was convicted, but we have run into cases where we know that a public company has been breached or a public company has been hit with ransomware or had data stolen and or had data stolen. And they show up on those dark websites, those ransomware groups or those extortion groups. And a couple days later, the chat portal is closed for negotiations and they're no longer listed on the leak site.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a glitch. It's not a mistake. It's not an error. It's not, whoops, we hacked the wrong company and we thought we were hacking X, you know, technology company or X, you know, law firm or X. You see, I'm kind of hinting at some of the ones that I think have probably or definitely been attacked and breached.
Sure.
But it's not a mistake. They paid. They paid.
Right,
there was never a public utterance, an advisory, a disclosure, anything about that. It was just swept under the rug.
So I guess I understand what I think you're saying, which is that, companies probably all the time quietly pay off the hacker and then don't disclose, and that's
but not an FTC, like not under an FTC.
Right, that's the thing.
Order, yes.
The spirit of this happens a lot, I'm sure. But I'm saying, unless new laws are made, or it's a specific type of ransomware being paid off, or a specific context, I guess, still wonder if the judge is still describing too specific of a legal situation to actually be relevant. That's all. Sorry to interrupt.
No. I mean, you make a great point. That's exactly what I was thinking, is that, you know, the FTC, the way that this lined up, the timeline of events here for to have a breach or a bucket exposure, and then 2 years later have the exact same thing while you're under an FTC investigation for the previous breach, and you know how embarrassing it is, and you don't really want to let it out. You don't want to take the fine. You don't want to, whatever. Mm-hmm. It is unique because, you know, the FTC has gotten a lot more aggressive with actions like this over the last decade, but there's not that many of them. There's not that many high profile cases where they sue or they, you know, they there's a major fine leveled against an organization for repeated breaches. It's not that common. So you're right about that. I just wonder, are CISOs going to take that aspect of this and be like, well, this was a unique situation because there was an FTC investigation, and just say, well, it's probably okay if we do this and there's no FTC involvement and there's no law enforcement and we're not in the midst of a settlement with another government body or federal regulators or so on and so forth. And that's what I worry about. That's what I think is probably going to happen, because I got to be honest, just to go back to this, you know, to the Cloudflare thing, you know, that Bloomberg story came out and it was a major scandal. And he was fired that day. And Craig Clark, the former lawyer, they were fired. And a few months later, you know, whatever, 6 months later, Cloudflare hires him as their first ever CISO. And so, looking at the details of the case, one must sort of assume that Cloudflare looked at this and said, did its due diligence, and said, well, he didn't do anything wrong. Because otherwise, why would you hire him? And if a major company like that thinks that he's not totally toxic and he's okay to hire with that type of scandal and that type of cloud, before the charges are even filed, just that report and the fact that he was fired, that they think it's okay, that they think it's worth not just to hire the guy as like an advisor, or we're putting him on staff as like an associate or whatever, or we're bringing him in just to try him out. They named him their first ever CISO. If that's okay, and that's the type of mentality that's out there for a major company like a Cloudflare, then I am very skeptical that any organization is going to take this the way that I think Oric wants to take the sentencing, which is don't do this because you're going to get burned. So I have my doubts. Clearly, you can tell by my overt skepticism here, Alex.
But so I guess two things. One,
yeah,
someone who has the LinkedIn profile of Joe Sullivan,
yes,
is gonna get hired somewhere in the world for a lot of money.
Yes.
When all this is wrapped up, some Tel Aviv company is gonna hire him, sure, as their first CISO for sure, right?
I get it.
Which is what it is, but that's probably how it is. The other thing is, Cloudflare is kind of a unique case, right? Where not unique, but don't they have kind of a bit of a controversial record for neither here nor there, but it's like maybe they found someone who was maybe he ended up at a company that was a little less willing to be like, this guy's toxic, which independent of your judgments of the other things Cloudflare's been involved with. Like, sure. I see how he falls upward, I guess what I'm saying.
I guess, but I think there's a difference between, you know, Matthew Prince and, you know, the company having sort of, I think, sincere and good faith debates about what you should do as a content delivery network and an anti-DDoS provider, and like, should we be hosting sites that are, or should we be assisting and working with sites that, you know, are white supremacists,
right?
Let's be honest. And like, if we don't do this, then who will? And I disagreed with their positions on those things, and I was happy when they dropped some of those sites. That is worlds different to me than saying, this guy who was just fired for allegedly covering up a data breach as a CSO, we're going to hire him as our CSO. And I think that messaging, that presentation that you're putting out there is one of like, well, he did nothing wrong. And you're right. It could just be one of those situations where the company had really, really, really looked into this and kind of came to the same conclusions as maybe the judge did this year. Maybe back mm-hmm. then they said, well, this isn't totally your fault and we understand why you did it. And hopefully, you know, you won't be charged or you won't be convicted of this and you're a good guy and you're a former federal prosecutor. And they just weighed the whole calculus and just said, we're willing to give you a shot. That's fine. But like I said, way back when, it would have been nice if like Cloudflare or Matthew Prince or whoever was just a little bit more clear on like what they saw and why they were hiring them and make it clear, like, we're not condoning this type of behavior. We want to be fully yada, yada, yada. We want to be transparent. We don't believe in covering up data breaches, blah, blah, blah. But we think that Joe's a valuable executive and tons of experience, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, when something like that is not there and it's absent, I guess that concerns me. And it concerns me that so many people who wrote those letters, who vouched for Sullivan, like Oryk said, demonstrated to him a fundamental misunderstanding of what the case is about. And if they're misunderstanding the case and they're advocating that he shouldn't go to jail, what does that tell you? I mean, that also tells you that they didn't think he did anything wrong. You know, mm-hmm. regardless of the FTC or whatever. So I look at this and I want to believe that what Oryk said is that warning is going to be heeded, but I don't think it is. I think we have a terrible, terrible, terrible situation with transparency in this country.
Sure.
When it comes to cyber attacks. You know, this is one of my sticking points. I complain about this all the time. I don't see this conviction and this late sentencing doing anything to really move the needle on that. I think there are going to be cases, like I said, where executives are going to see this and say, well, we don't have the FTC breathing down our neck, so why can't we just pay him and frame it as a bug bounty? So I don't know. I'm not optimistic at all. What do you think? Do you think that people are actually going to take this and say, we got to be much, much, much more careful?
I don't know. Like, I was thinking of something that Chet Wisniewski, yep, Sophos Field CTO, was telling me about the Biden software liability yes. stuff.
Yep.
Which is, and I think that's represented in the article that is on the site now at Tech Target Security. It's pretty good. Yes. I recommend it. He told me that no matter what we'd like to happen with things like transparency and software liability, and he was talking about transparency liability or software liability, excuse me, but yes. I think it's relevant here because transparency was part of that same strategic yes. objective that he referenced. He basically said that all the government can kind of do is ask nice because no one's going to agree with each other. And I kind of agree that I don't see in any practical way, to your point, how this is going to dissuade people from doing a lesser version of this again.
Yeah.
Like, maybe they'll be scared of lying to the FTC. Maybe that part. If something exactly like this happens again, maybe they won't lie to the FTC this time, and maybe they won't use their own HackerOne bug bounty platform to pay a criminal $100,000.
Yeah, two criminals. But yes.
Two criminals, yes. Excuse me. But do I think that this is going to stop companies from paying someone after a data breach or extortionware or ransomware and then not disclosing it if they don't strictly have to? No. Like, obviously that's going to keep happening, I think.
Yeah.
That's what I think, at least.
I think you're right. And maybe we're just being pessimists, but...
Again... I don't know. I think it's a logical conclusion to everything that has happened so far in recent cybersecurity and legal history.
Yeah. Well, I hope we're wrong. Mm-hmm. I hope we're wrong. And I should note, I don't wish to see Joe Sullivan in jail serving time. But yeah, I do wonder what the takeaway is in a lot of boardrooms right now. Because you got to know that these guys are probably talking about it, especially the companies that are dealing with an incident right now, right this very minute. And there are a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of them. What those discussions are, how they're weighing the risk, how they're wondering about what their obligation is to transparency and the law, and whether they're, regardless of whether they think they're going to go to jail or not. And do you want to be charged by the feds? Do you want to be a convicted felon? You know, all that I wonder about. And I would think that it would make a normal person say, no, this isn't worth it. But we're talking about millions and sometimes billions of dollars as a result of a cyber attack. And then you have fines and legal action and class action lawsuits and God knows what else going on. There's a lot at stake with these attacks. So, you know, I would love to be a fly on the wall in some of these meetings going on right now where they're weighing the decisions about how, you know, whether or not to disclose an attack or a data breach or a data theft, and how to do it, what to share, or whether or not to just try to make it go away.
Mm-hmm.
Now we'll see.
For sure.
Alex, I appreciate you jumping on the pod with me to discuss this topic.
Sure.
You know that I get very spirited about this. So thanks for dealing with me.
That's what it's here for. We can't put this in an article.
I know, that's true. And thank you to the readers and listeners of Tech Target Security and the Risk and Repeat podcast. I'm Rob Wright, and we'll see you next time.